Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
Eric Trump was spit on by an employee at the Aviary in Chicago last night. It's an upscale bar.
Yes.
Owned by the same people that own Alinea. So there's Eric Trump, and a bartender sees him and she spits on him. You have three options. A, bad behavior, don't stoop to that level. B, bad behavior, but yeah, I get it. Or C, good idea. The Trumps need to know how people feel about them. Is there another option in there? Like, I think maybe the very first option should be, that's not civil discourse, that's assault or something like that.
The restaurant put out a statement, and they tried to say the right thing.
I thought they did.
Well, they used the wrong term. They referred to it as civil disobedience. It was an act of violence. Civil disobedience is when you sit in a chair and don't get up.
I think an act of violence is when they hit you in the nose.
If you're spitting on someone, I'm pretty confident that's an assault.
Okay.
The other question should be, what crime should be, or what charge should she be facing?
I'm not interested in that.
you would be if someone spit at you.
I might, but I'm not Eric Trump either. Well, so here's the options. You know what, Steve? I hear you. Maybe we'll amend it. Here's what I've written. Bad behavior, don't stoop to that level, which certainly you would agree with, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And maybe I should say bad behavior, that's assault. Maybe that's it. Bad behavior, that's assault. Don't stoop to that level. Or bad behavior, but yeah, I get it. And C, good idea. They need to know how we feel. You almost feel as though you, in quotes here, one might feel like if that guy is walking by, I'm not just going to accommodate their behavior. What tools do I have to lash out? And this is one of them.
A loogie?
I'm not saying that's the correct answer. I'm explaining the thought process behind the three.
Yeah.
At WGNradio.com. Vote with your mouse. Just click through and tell us how you feel about it. It is on the station website, Elif, is that correct? The news click, or it's going to be?
It's going to be.
It's not there yet. It will be in moments. Okay. Well, hey, John, there's a fun start to the show. Are you paying attention to the College World Series? There is a baseball facility in Broadview in the southwest suburbs called Strikes Baseball Academy. My son used to go there all the time when he was a player. My Grant would hit with a guy there named Steve Hayward. I came to call Steve the Hit Whisperer because Steve will work. He'll work with your kids too. Here's what he did with mine. Steve is silly. He's serious. He's successful. And he just knows why a kid is or isn't swinging the baseball bat correctly and how they can improve it. It's really fun to watch. When you walk in to Strikes Baseball Academy, the first guy you'll usually see is named Jim Donovan. Jim works with the hitters and the fielders, and his son, Joe, is the catcher for Michigan. Michigan is in the final championship game of the College World Series tonight. It all comes down to the game this evening against Vanderbilt. As exciting, then, as this evening is for the Donovans of Clarendon Hills, it's also a time of reflection because their other son, Charlie, 3 years older than Joe, was going to play shortstop for Michigan when he passed away suddenly at the age of 18. So instead of realizing the chance to see their two sons playing together, tonight they see just one. I spoke moments ago to Joe Donovan. He's in Omaha. Of course, his son is out there playing, but he's also actually coaching a youth baseball team that's out there for a tournament as well. And we started by talking about the son who's catching for Michigan tonight, Joe.
Yes, he's the catcher, Joe Donovan, the long-haired catcher.
is that his trademark?
He wears a headband and there's some significance to that as well.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about that. You are a hitting instructor at a place that my son used to go to and a lot of kids in the southwestern suburbs go to called Strikes, right? So you're a kind of a baseball.
Correct.
Are you a hitting coach, a pitching coach? What do you do?
I spend most of my time with hitters, catchers, and middle infielders.
And you work with them on their fielding skills or their hitting skills?
Hitting and fielding.
So you have had two sons who have played at the very highest level in youth baseball. One of them is on the Michigan team. He's the catcher. Tell me about your other son.
Charlie was our middle son who passed away in 2015, but he was an elite shortstop, just a very high-level player who was left-handed hitting, right-handed throwing, and just a special player.
Yeah, he was fast. He was a shortstop. He was the Illinois player of the year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He had a scholarship to Michigan. What happened?
Some of those details I'm not allowed to talk about because there's a lawsuit in motion, but he died prematurely and never made it to Michigan.
It was his senior year, and he contracted mononucleosis. You all were, okay, he's got mono, but suddenly something happened, and he passed away.
Yes, he passed away prematurely, and it's been a struggle since, for certain. But this has provided an opportunity for his brother to really give a sort of pay homage to him in indirectly through this incredible journey he's on.
Yeah, no kidding.
Currently.
He would have been a senior shortstop for Michigan this year. He would have been on this team. But then Michigan offered a scholarship to his younger brother, the long-haired catcher we're talking about. Is Joe a freshman on the team?
Joe's a sophomore.
Sophomore. So they would have been on the team together.
The whole plan was that Joe and Charlie would play together. I think the realistic answer is that Charlie probably wouldn't have been on this team because he most likely would have been drafted after his junior year. However, they've treated him as a senior, and it's been wonderful.
What do you mean treated him as a senior?
Well, they included him in their senior day ceremonies, which was incredibly touching for us, and we just appreciate that so much.
So he's still on the team in spirit, as it were.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so then his younger brother's plan was to follow in his brother's footsteps.
Exactly.
And he's getting reps. Is he the starting catcher for Michigan?
He's the starting catcher.
As a sophomore. My goodness. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Does he have the skills to play at the next level, do you think?
We believe so. That's what the scouting feedback is at this point.
The Big Ten doesn't normally go this far in the tournament. Tell me about this Michigan team. 50-21.
Yeah, it was a great team through most of the season. They sort of ran out of gas at the end, lost the regular season title, and then still advanced to the Big Ten tournament, lost in the semifinals, and miraculously still got a bid to the NCAA tournament, which was in question for a period of time.
Really?
Yeah, and then they went out to Corvallis, Oregon, and worked their way through the regional, went to UCLA to face the number one national seed, and beat them. And just an amazing process. It's hard to even put into words the excitement and the stress. It's literally indescribable.
I think any of us who have had kids play sports know the word you just touched on. It's been great fun, especially when they're successful. But the stress is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, every at-bat, every pitch. And your son is involved in half of the plays of the game. He's the catcher,
yes.
So he's touching the ball all the time.
Yes. Yeah, I call the catchers the offensive linemen of baseball because nobody does a whole lot about them unless they give up a sack or a pass ball or a wild pitch.
Was there a play that really stands out in your mind for your family, for your son, say, in this run-up to the championship game tonight?
Well, there's been several. He had a big home run at UCLA. He had a near-miss walk-off, what would have been the walk-off home run to win the Super Regional. But the heavy California air in the evening knocked it down, and It was literally the most exciting and devastating moment of my life.
Welcome to being a parent of an athlete.
Yes, exactly.
And I can relate to it because my son played a little bit of high school or college ball, but nothing like this. So if any of us go, oh, yeah, that was me, you're probably there to say, no, it's even more crazy than you can imagine.
Yes, exactly.
So as you're watching these travails and these successes for that team and your son, I don't want to dwell on this, but I just can't imagine. It must be in some ways a little bittersweet for you guys, huh?
Truly. Yeah, there's no question about that, John. I mean, he's constantly on our minds, and it's hard not to think about the chance that he would have been here if something had happened where he stayed his senior year and would have been on this team and on this run with us. It would have been really special. But, you know, that's sort of the new normal for us.
Yeah, right. You've been dealing with that for about 4 years now, huh?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
So just one last anecdote about that, and that is after the game the other night, your son came down the line to visit with you guys after advancing to the championship game, and there's a story in the Detroit Free Press about how he came up and gave you and your wife Karen a hug, and then another young man came up and approached the three of you. Do you know the story I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah, I was a witness to it. So Joe was, we were standing there after the game, and a gentleman walks up and asks me if I would mind asking Joe if he would take a picture with his son. And I said, I'm sure he'd be willing to do that. And said, hey, Joe, can you take a picture with this little guy? And he said, yeah, sure. He calls him over and he says, what's your name? He says, Charlie. He said, what position do you play? Shortstop. So our eyes met and we immediately both burst into tears and my wife burst into tears. And then he said, I think my brother just said hi to me. And it was beyond words, of course. But it's also very comforting because we believe he's with us all the time, and there are some pretty amazing signs that present themselves to us to make us believe that.
Hmm. So the championship game is tonight. You are also in Omaha coaching a youth team, right?
Yes, the Lincoln Wildcats.
Because you don't have enough baseball in your life, Dad? What's the matter with you?
Exactly.
What are you doing there? You told me off the air that you set up this tournament. You're also a youth coach. This isn't none of your kids are on this youth team you're coaching, right?
No. This is something I'm doing with a great friend of mine, Mark Iozzo from Ogden Lincoln.
Well, did you look at the schedule for the College World Series? It would have been maybe, you know, optimistic, but did you look at the schedule and go, boy, if Michigan's in the championship, then it could get in the way, for crying out loud.
Well, and we laugh about it every day now. Mark made this call that he wanted to be here for the championship series, the last session of this tournament, so that he could see Joe play.
So you say, okay, that means we're going to have a really good season. Joe's going to have a good season. We'll get to the World Series. We'll be in the championship game of the World Series. And then we'll be out there with the youth team when the big boys are there. So it'll work out great. And you go, yeah,
exactly.
yeah, right. Yeah, sure. Okay, fine.
And for me, it was just so great to be able to share this because, you know, Mark and a couple of the other dads are just some of my best friends. And it adds another layer of special to this recipe.
Yeah. Well, we're all rooting for Michigan tonight, for your family, for your son, for your late son. It's hard to think of Michigan in terms of being an underdog in anything, but, you know, they are in the College World Series. They had to get a bid to get in, so congratulations.
Really? Well, I've seen this from the get-go, really since UCLA, as a David and Goliath scenario, and just hoping we have one more good stone.
So what's give me your prediction. How's this game going to go down tonight?
Well, it's going to be a lot of good pitching. You know, our starter, Carl Kaufman, is outstanding, and our reliever, Jeff Criswell, is ready to go. So I expect it to be a low-scoring game, and someone's going to make a play, make a mistake, get a timely hit that's going to make the difference.
Where does Joe bat in the lineup?
Right now, he's been 7 or 8. We lost our leadoff hitter yesterday to a quad sprain or strain.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
But I think everybody's going to move up one, most likely.
And, does that take a little pressure off you guys to, you know, he doesn't have to bat in the maybe first inning? He can get a look at the pitcher a little more?
Well, he'd love to be batting in the first inning, frankly, but I'm good with it. As long as he's, the way I look at it, as long as his defense is good, then he's serving his main purpose. And the hitting is all a bonus. Although he hit a home run the other night, which was pretty exciting.
Yeah, no kidding. What a thrill for the family. Well, the headband that he wears, what's that all about?
Okay, so the headband, we actually learned when Charlie died, a bunch of the families in the community tied white ribbons around trees everywhere. And he's been wearing this white headband to control his hair, but also pay homage to his brother. He has one that says Hail and one that is 153, which denotes the 153rd Michigan team in program history. And then he has a block M, but they're all white.
Yeah.
In honor of Charlie.
Okay, buddy. We're rooting for you and your family. And if you have a child who wants to learn how to hit, go to this musty old place called, Strikes.
It's in Broadview.
Broadview, yeah, right. We used to live in LaGrange Park, so it was just up and over for us a couple blocks, but it was in technically Broadview. And when you go to it, it's not one of these gleaming White Sox state-of-the-art hitting and batting facilities. What it is it's a bunch of people who know the game, love the kids, and can see the little intricacies of a baseball pitch or hit that even smart parents can't. And you guys in those cages, it's just so fun to see the relationship you have with the kids and the success that those kids have because of what you guys do.
It's really nice to play a part. We know that they still have to swing the bats, but it's nice to be behind them.
Yeah. Strikes Baseball Academy, or hitting it. What do they call it?
Strikes Baseball Academy.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck to you.
We do a lot of softball as well.
Yeah, no kidding. I see a lot of the ladies there working on their game, and it's just a busy, fun place. It's serious, but it's also fun. And the experience of my family, and I know yours, has been that the kids have fun and improve their game. And we'll see some of it on display tonight.
Go Blue. Thanks for having me, John.
Take care.
Appreciate it.
Jim Donovan's son, Joe, is the starting catcher for Michigan. They're from Clarendon Hills.
Yes, he's the catcher.
So let's root for them tonight. what else was I just going to mention before we go into the WGN Radio newsroom? Oh, yeah, just the details on the game. If you're watching it on TV, it's on ESPN tonight. ESPN tonight at 6 o'clock Central. Michigan won the first game 7-4. Vanderbilt won the second game 4-1. So it'll be game three tonight.
I only saw Michigan play one game this year.
Was it against your nephew?
Oh, you mean when Easton hit a home run and they lost?
Is that who Easton hit it against?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
He had a couple home runs, but yeah, that was against Michigan.
Well, then he's always, I don't know what Easton's future is, but he's sure got that to brag about forever and ever.
Yeah.
So now are you guys rooting for Michigan tonight?
I really didn't know they were playing.
So you're not following it that closely.
Well, I will now. What an unbelievable story you just told.
Yeah, his dad is a good sport in every sense of that word. And you know who's talking up Michigan around here is Lou Manfredini.
Who?
Exactly. So Big Blue Lou has been in some of our ears about it. And then a friend of mine told me this story and said, why don't you reach out to him? And because the youth team he's coaching, Jim Donovan, there in Omaha is in a rain delay, he said, yeah, I got a few minutes. I'll talk to you right now. So we jumped into the studio just before we walked into here. It's 1:32 into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom now. WGN Radio News with Steve Bertrand. E. Jean Carroll, she's that L Advice columnist and author of several books. She's got a new book out, What Do We Need Men For? A Modest Proposal. And it is in that new book that she describes the sexual assault that she suffered at the hands of Donald Trump. The president, of course, denies it. Les Moonves, she said, also assaulted her and several other men over her years. She will join us after 2 o'clock. We'll visit with her a little after 2. We'll also visit with a volunteer who has been working as an attorney for the migrant families crossing the border and the conditions of the facilities where the kids are being held, to say nothing of that heartbreaking photo of the father and child who drowned in the Rio Grande trying to cross. She can describe for us. She has been down there, and she knows what the situation is. She'll join us after 2:30. Phil Vitel is the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune, and he joins us Wednesdays about this time to talk about the restaurant scene, usually in the studio, but today he's on the phone. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good.
Any place special, or you just didn't want to come see me today?
A little of both, but actually I'm in Denver. My wife had a business trip, and I'm tagging along, and I'm on the 17th floor of my hotel, and I can see the snowy peaks of the Rockies in the distance. So,
very nice.
It's kind of cool.
You got a restaurant that I'm going to be in Denver this summer. You got any recommendations for us in Denver?
Sure. The first thing I try to get you to do is rent a car or get a ride and go up to Boulder and try to get into Frasca Food and Wine. It's probably the best restaurant in these here parts. But in Denver itself, we've already had a very nice dinner at Rioja in the Larimer Square area, and also at a restaurant called Fruition, which is Alex Seidel's restaurant, and he's won Beard Award for Best Chef in this region in the past, so that's a very good one.
Do you walk in and say, okay, you may not know me because I'm from Chicago, but I'm a critic for the Chicago Tribune, baby, and kind of play that?
I've never tried that one. Probably too embarrassed to find it not working.
Yeah, and they go, yeah, well, you're still 45 minutes out. So.
Exactly. I made a reservation. I didn't even use my real name, but, you know, just got in, got out. It was very nice.
I want to talk about your review of Cafe Cancale, C-A-N-C-A-L-E. Which is a kind of a French-themed Wicker Park restaurant. Before we get to that, though, you've probably been hearing the news about what happened to Eric Trump at Aviary, and I just wanted to...
So I did.
Get your reaction to
that.
Yes.
Well, my first reaction is that, you know, Next has always had an avant-garde approach to delivering its cocktails. So unless I'd seen the context, I'm not absolutely sure what happened there. The other thing is, I assume that the person accused of doing this is going to say that it never happened and that Eric was not her type.
Oh, God. All right, let me just stop. Stop. Just stop it, Phil.
Okay, I'll stop.
They're not going to let you back. He's at Aviary, which is a pretty popular spot, and it's owned by the same people that own Alinea. So it's mm-hmm. high caliber of restaurant, bar, and staff at these places. But a waitress saw Eric Trump there Tuesday night, and evidently she spat at him. And then he said, I'm not going to press charges, but the Secret Service did immediately grab her, and I guess she was arrested and released. She hasn't issued a statement. The owner, Nick Kokonis.
Kokonis
has issued the following statement. Last night, an unfortunate incident occurred between an employee at the Aviary and Eric Trump. We did not witness the incident, and we are just beginning to learn the details. What is certain is this: no customer should ever be spit upon. We have not yet spoken with the employee, but our HR team has, in the meantime, placed her on leave. We will not discuss internal HR matters beyond this statement. More broadly, the online discussion about the incident is troubling. Hundreds of people have been calling for the demise of our business, threatening our employees, and posting fake reviews. They are wrong to do so based on the actions of a lone individual. So too, however, are those people wrong who are praising this as an act of civil disobedience. We have voices and the means to be heard. A degrading act lowers the tenor of the debate. To some, it might feel good, but it is unlikely to serve any larger purpose. We hope this incident can, at least, serve to illuminate the current absurdity of the discourse in our politics. I'm going to read that sentence again. We hope this incident can, at least, serve to illuminate the current absurdity of the discourse in our politics. As fellow Americans and citizens, we should all aim higher. Okay, what do you think about all of that?
Couldn't have said it better myself. I think that's the absolute perfect response.
What a rough spot for a restaurant owner, right? Particularly one who sort of jumped into the fray himself, right? Because what was the team that he offered the dinner to?
It was Clemson, wasn't it?
The Clemson football team.
Clemson Tigers. And they got the fast food treatment from Donald Trump, and there was a lot of conversation about that. And so then this guy surfaces and says, hey, come to Chicago and I'll show you a real good meal. Right. I thought that was a masterstroke of publicity, but it's also taking a shot at the president, isn't it?
Right. Well, or at least taking a shot at that one action by the president.
I guess my point is that should we be surprised if that's the culture at that restaurant, that when Eric Trump walks in, he's going to be met with some hostility by the staff?
Well, I mean, I would say there's a real long leap from one-upping a food decision by the White House and getting to the point of spitting on somebody. I don't think we would say, oh, well, of course it happened there because Nick Kokonis made a joke 2 years ago or a year ago. No, I think this kind of took the rest of the staff by surprise, and you can't have that. I mean, you simply no matter what your politics, no matter what actions you feel what are loathsome or how upset you are at whatever policy, we simply can't descend to this level. We can't do it.
You know, Phil, I'm surprised by your reaction to this statement, though, because first of all, I take issue with them calling it an act of civil disobedience, because this was violence.
I don't think he said that. He said that he was distressed at the people who commented on Facebook and wherever, calling it an act of civil disobedience.
I'm sorry if I misread that then.
So too, however, are those people wrong who are praising this as an act of civil disobedience?
I apologize, and I mistook that. Okay.
I'll hear that point, Steve. I think some people think, as upset as they are at anybody whose last name is Trump right now, when one of them walks by, they almost feel like it's wrong for them to treat those people with civility, considering what they are doing to the immigrants or to the economy or to the country or to the environment, whatever. And that guy walks right by and you're going to say, can I show you a table? No, you've got to let them know how you feel. That's the mindset of the other side.
Yeah, but the one job of a restaurant is to deliver safe and good food and beverages, and I think they should have fallen completely on their sword and left everything out on this, that what happened there was a terrible thing for their restaurant and for the country.
Do you agree with that, Phil?
Yeah, I think they've taken appropriate steps. The accused employee has been placed on leave. HR is working on it. He apologized for the incident, said it does not, that it is not in keeping with their standards of hospitality, and that it should never happen to anybody. And he distanced himself from the people who were applauding this for whatever reason on Facebook and other social media, and said we have to be better. We have to raise our discourse. We can't simply, because ultimately, where does it end? If it's okay for someone to spit on a member of a party they disagree with, no matter how vehemently, then what happens if a liberal, say, as like me, walks into a restaurant where the employee has sort of MAGA inclinations? Do I now worry about what's going on to my underneath my hamburger bun, or can we be better than this?
I get that point. The second to last sentence, though, is this. We hope this incident. So Producer Elif exchanged messages with Nick Kokonis today, and he declined to come on, and that's probably wise. Better that he thinks out his thoughts, puts them to paper, and not get caught up in a conversation where he might say something that might be misinterpreted. But I'm interpreting this. We hope this incident can at least serve to illuminate the current absurdity of the discourse in our politics. And I don't think he's talking about the absurdity of his employee alone. I mean, if that's your idea of discourse, that's wrong. But I think he's also saying these people are absurd as well on the other side.
I think so. I think he's making a larger point there, that this is, you know, this should be our, if maybe this should be our call to action, saying, okay, we are going to be civil human beings about this, and you know, and we can't. It's gotten to the point of what people on social media and everything is the person you disagree with is evil incarnate. And there's absolutely no middle ground, and there's no brooking what that other person might have to say, and it's just tearing us apart.
I hear you on that, Phil. Well, but let me just last thing I'll say about this. I want to get to your review, and I want to do a flash fry with you. But
all right.
There's a restaurant in Minneapolis called Hell's Kitchen, and it's really popular. They do a great brunch. It's famous, and they do a nice lunch. It's an interesting room. If you go to Minneapolis and you're downtown, if you go to Hell's Kitchen, you'll be treated to an interesting culinary experience. They are very political. They take on causes and issues, and they're on social media. I know the owner, at least I've met her a few times. She's talked to me. I suspect she would say maybe what Nick is saying here, that kind of behavior is beneath all of us. But some restaurants do get into that game. I mean, if the Republican National Convention comes to Minneapolis, none of those members would be wise to go to Hell's Kitchen. That restaurant is not on their side. I don't know what you think about restaurants that sort of stake out a ground that way. Evidently, Aviary doesn't want any part of that, but some restaurants and bars do.
I think it's okay for a restaurant or bar to make its political beliefs known. I think it's all right for them to stand up for causes and that sort of thing, because they do so in the full knowledge that this might cost them business. And it's out front, and it's published, and everybody knows. That doesn't mean that if a Republican senator from another state were to go into that restaurant, that they would refuse to serve him or her, or mistreat that person in any way. But I think you can do the one that is stand up for what you believe in, make your political positions known, without going as so far as to the other when you are refusing service or actively providing bad service.
In the Chicago Tribune, this man, Phil Vitel, has a nice review of Café Canal, brings a coastal French breeze to Wicker Park. Tell me about that after this, Phil Vitel. Phil Vitel's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. He joins us long distance today. We appreciate that, Phil. Your review is of a French restaurant in Chicago. You like this Wicker Park place pretty well, huh?
Yes, it's right on the Wicker Park Bucktown border, right where Milwaukee, Damon, and North Avenue converge. And it used to be the home to Publican Anchor, which was an offshoot of the Publican in west of the Loop. And now the owners changed it to Café Cancal, which refers to a part of France best known for its oysters. And the whole place has kind of a Frenchy seafoody vibe.
Frenchy seafoody vibe. So they've got fish, they've got chicken, they've got beef, you say, too. There's a lot of meat on the menu, but there's a classic roasted chicken with buttermilk mashed potatoes and a fine steak frite topped with escargot-enhanced Bordelaise sauce.
Wow. Right. Those are the only two meat dishes on the menu.
Ah.
That's the meat.
That's it. After that,
everything else was. I think there might be a. I take it back. I think there's a steak tartare in there somewhere too. But most of it is fish and rabar stuff, and it's very, very good.
Conversation Challenge. It's another slightly noisy place. The main courses run you $20 to $30. This one gets 4 stars. No, wait. This one gets. How many stars did you give this one?
Three stars. stars.
Three stars. Yeah, there it is. From Phil Vitel, Cafe Canal, 1576 North Milwaukee Avenue. All right, if you've got a restaurant you want to, real quick, jump in now. Call or text 312-981-7200. It's time for Phil's Flash Fry. 3, 2, 1, hit it. I'm going to be right. This is the part of the show where you've called or texted and you wanted some advice from Phil on a restaurant or a menu item, and maybe you want to crow about a place and say, hey, have you guys checked this one out? Phil, this one says, John, about once a month, you and Phil talk about restaurants. Oh, yeah. I don't know how much time you have for this, Phil. I don't have much. About restaurants that everyday people go to. Talk about normal everyday restaurants. My shop listens all day to WGN, and we chuckle about the choices we hear because we're not going to visit those places. Okay, so they're not going to go to Cancal or Band of Bohemia, where I was last night for a real nice meal. What's a good meat and potatoes for Midwesterners that's not going to break the bank?
Well, okay, first I need to see your bank book, but I would say that, I mean, what about normal people? The implication being that you and I are not normal people.
That's embedded in this, yes.
And on one level, I'm happy with that. On another level, I'm not. But there are lots of fun neighborhood places. I've written about Le Sud in Roscoe Village, which is not terribly expensive. Cancal, among other things, Cancal has a great 4 to 6 p.m. happy hour where oysters are $1 and martinis are discounted as well. So you can be well on the way to an inexpensive meal if you get there in the early hours.
Let me ask you this. 708 said, Chinese restaurants west. A Chinese restaurant west. Any ideas on that?
Yeah, a few, but I don't know how far west is west, but it says it's from 708, so I'll assume it only goes so far west, because I first thought of, say, Yu's Mandarin in Schaumburg, which is a great noodle-focused Chinese restaurant, and Chef Ping up in Hoffman Estates. But in the near west, there's a fun place that is kind of one of my guilty pleasures, Chef Shangri-La in North Riverside. It's got this tiki decor. They do a lot of tiki drinks, and the menu is all over the place. They have Japanese noodle soup. They have Vietnamese pho. They have a Thai dish. They have some Hawaiian and Polynesian kind of things.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. Sesame chicken here. They do a hoisin duck that's probably very close to.
All right, What is this place?
It's called Chef Shangri-La.
It's a
fun place, and it's the decor is tiki. So your decor is Polynesian, and the menu goes over to Thailand, and it goes all over the place. Indefinable, but fun.
Time's up. I've got more to ask you about, but we'll do them next week. Have safe travels. Thanks for your thoughts on all of these topics, Phil.
Absolutely.
Phil Vitel, restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have
all
to.
Day long.
Here's John.
This is what we do. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3. On Saturdays, we do a show from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals, judged this year by the Illinois Broadcasters Association to be the best podcast in Illinois. We've got a news click at WGNradio.com. It's a question about something going on in the news. I'm not loving the question today, but there it is. I wrote it. It says Eric Trump was spat upon?
Spat on, I think.
What's the past tense of spit? Spit, spat, sput?
Jail.
Eric Trump was spit on. Was spit.
I always go back to David Bowie. And these children that you spit on.
I don't know that song.
Changes? Spit's not used in every version.
Eric Trump was spit on. Eric Trump was spat on.
He was spat on.
By an employee at the aviary in Chicago last night. Three options are awaiting your click. Bad behavior. Don't stoop to that level. Bad behavior, but yeah, I kind of get it. And see, good behavior. Trump needs to know how some people feel. So if you just say don't lower yourself to that level, Phil Vitel cautioned all of us, as did the owner of the aviary. That employee's been put on indefinite hold or leave. Then you go, A, bad behavior. Let's not stoop to that level. In fact, a texter sent this in. If the spitter had a disease such as HIV/AIDS, that would be a crime. You know, I think it is a crime anyway.
Well, it's got to be. You can't spit on someone.
It's like
slugging someone. You don't.
It's not.
It is. It is a physical assault.
I think it's a physical assault if you've got a disease. I can't spit on you.
I mean, you cannot spit on me.
I'm going to go to jail if I spit on you?
Unless you're really excited and you're making a point and something sneaks out. That's the only
way. I'm telling you about this really good movie.
Right.
It's so good. No, and I hope you understand, Steve, that I'm not advocating
you're
that.
You're anti-spit. I get it.
But it's, I think that we need to be reasonable about this.
I think it is, and I think it's reasonable to expect that you can walk down the street without being spat on.
So then what are you going to do about that?
You are charged
and
with
that's
disorderly
the same
conduct.
As, is that same Vysocki in the nose? I mean, what would you rather have? Okay, that's a stupid question, but I still think that those are somehow my... Not every offense is a crime.
What about getting a drink poured on you?
It's kind of like that. Where are you on that one, Lauren Lapka?
I'm kind of in the middle of both of you because it's definitely harassment.
No, it's a crime. You can't go throw a drink on someone either, but...
You can?
No, I've had plenty of people do it to me, and I didn't get to charge them.
Well, if you'd called the police, they might have charged the person, but...
But, and see, that seems over the top to me.
Okay,
I mean, I do think
I understand
it's
that.
So I'm
going to
call the cop. Right, I know. It's like none of that is warranted,
right,
but what
very,
are we going to do about it is another matter.
It's very shameful.
But spitting on someone... Is a physical assault. Absolutely.
You and I started this conversation several years ago, right, Steve?
When, did we? It seems like it.
When Jim Thompson got hit with a pie. Was it Jim Thompson or Governor Ryan or somebody? But one of the governors was at the... Okay, this is in my head. It might not even be true. One of the governors was at the state fair or somewhere, and he got hit in the face with a pie or a cake or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I said... All right, you shouldn't do that, but it's... I saw that as an expression. I saw that as a measure of speech.
Well,
and I know that you felt differently about
that's
that.
That's an assault.
Yeah, I don't think you should be throwing baked goods at people, but...
If you were walking down the street and someone was angry with you, I mean, it wasn't just random, someone was angry with you about something and they threw something at your face...
Okay, well, fair enough, but what if they spat at me?
That's worse.
If you and I have an argument, I said, okay, I'm done with you. I walk away. You're going to call the cops?
Well, that's a different point. It's not whether I'm going to call the cops. I mean, but it's whether or not it's a crime. And if some stranger does it and the cop is there, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really not much different than being slapped in the face. Or being smacked in the face.
I think it is. We can't have this conversation until we learn the correct verb tense of what the crimes we're describing.
It's spat. I promise you that it's a physical assault.
I don't doubt that. But Eric, I think wisely, chose not to press charges. And while the Secret Service accosted this lady, I understand she's been released.
Do we know that? Is that right?
My estimated probability of accuracy on this is 80%.
Okay.
The waitress at the Aviary in Westtown was taken into custody after she spat on Trump. That answers one question, according to a spokesperson. He's been in Chicago and staying at Trump Hotel. The waitress had been placed on leave, according to a statement. They said that no customer should ever be spit upon, so we're back to that one, and said that the restaurant will not take further actions. Eric was out to dinner on a business trip.
The restaurant will not take further action?
Against the customer. Let's see. Let me read
no,
that
No, I
again.
Think that they're still investigating it before.
And said the restaurant won't make further statements,
right. Okay,
about internal human relations matters.
I mean, I'm assuming she'll be fired as soon as they, look into it. I mean, she would have to be fired. You have to be fired.
Yeah.
Would you ever go to a restaurant again if you knew that... The waitstaff was spitting on people and then kept the job?
I think you're asking the wrong person that. I think if you asked the people listening to us right now, knowing what you know about this, does this make you more likely, less likely, or no difference to go to that restaurant? I don't think I know the answer to that.
How
I don't think it's a slam dunk.
How could it make you more likely to go to the restaurant?
Okay, but does...
I mean,
because
you have this sick spit thing going.
No, because it's... Oh, come on, Steve. You know the answer to that question. Are you going to force me to tell you why?
Please do.
Because they agree with the politics.
Okay,
That's why.
But you can agree with the politics, but not want to go to a place where people who disagree with you politically spit on you.
I think you are discounting the visceral reaction people have when they come face to face with one of those people. They can't, not only can they can help it, but they barely can contain themselves, and they choose not to. And I think some, this is what I, you heard what I said to Phil, that I think some people almost feel like it's an obligation, that we don't need to lower ourselves to civility. We need to rise up to speaking our truth about how we feel. Don't let them get away with it.
Well, I agree with that. You certainly should speak your truth about how you feel. But you should keep your spittle in your mouth.
Thank you. Tim?
Yes. That's the truth.
Do you want to know what happens if you spit on someone in Illinois?
You've got the statute?
Yeah. According to one of the law firms in town, spitting on someone it has the same definition as battery. It's just a different subsection. So it can get you up to a year in jail.
Wow. Hmm. Don't be so happy about that.
I'm not happy. I was your degree of certainty. I was 182%. No can do.
630, John, when we resort to things like this, we've lost all forms of communication. We're lost as a person if we do that, says 630. Okay. Somebody else related to me an incident that happened to them, but I'm not exactly sure what this means. Tell me if you guys can make heads or tails of this. A local coffee house threw my son out because some girls were waiting for their coffee. They were bashing gun owners. So you're standing in line, two ladies are talking about it, and they don't like people that own guns. He, her son, stood up for our constitutional rights. He's also serving in the Navy. None of us will step into a Starbucks ever again. He didn't swear or yell. He just told the girls the gun owners were not the monsters that they were describing them as. The manager heard the conversation, handed my son his drink, and told him to leave. Okay, so even though the guy got his coffee, he was told to leave. And I would not have handled it that way. I wouldn't have kicked either of them out. I mean, unless they're creating a ruckus.
Yeah, I don't know what that
that's is. That's a fair conversation.
I'd like to hear a different version of that story.
No, but I salute the Navy man in that. If you choose to enter that conversation and you keep your voice down, you want to express yourself.
Well, you're right. How do you know what he said or if he kept his voice down? And how do you the letter, the writer there said that he expressed his support for the Constitution.
Yeah.
Well, do we know that the women who were upset with gun owners were saying that they were opposed to the Constitution?
Well, who are you today? Well, I'm describing a scene that I'm imagining is different than yours.
I know. Well, that's what I mean. So we're going on three sentences and creating our own scenes out of
okay,
it.
Okay. Well, it's my show.
Okay.
So let's imagine this scenario, and then you can imagine yours.
Okay.
They're standing in line. Two ladies going, oh, I think guns are bad and people that own guns are monsters. In fact, the mother says here, this is the exact word, monsters. And then this Navy man is standing behind him. And he's in my world, he goes, you know, ladies, actually, it's a constitutional right. People that own guns aren't monsters. They're exercising the right the same way you do free speech that you're exercising now. Latte, cappuccino, please. And then the owner hears this, and he goes, huh, I don't like guns either. And then he says, hey, Mr. Navy man, you have to leave the restaurant because we don't like that kind around here. In that case, I feel like the Navy man was in the right.
Well, in that case, that may well be true.
That was the one that was playing in my head.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, was he going to be, do we know, did he want to sit down?
Was he going to what?
Was he going to sit down, or was it, I mean, was he leaving anyway?
I don't know if he had a cookie or what but, I mean, his plans for the day were.
But he gave him she gave him the coffee, so it's like, thank you, sir. Go have another somewhere else.
708 said, if you cannot pee on people, why in God's name would you be able to spit on them? It's battery. 708 has texted in, bodily fluids. 231, I dislike Trump as much as anyone, but I agree with Steve. 619, Steve, I'm going. The waitress is my hero. This is somebody that's going to go to the aviary now,
right,
to support that waitress who probably will never have a paycheck there.
You better go to your ATM machine first, but go ahead.
630, I will go out of my way to go to the aviary if they keep the employee.
Wow.
Okay, but I probably not a bad. If that lady keeps her job, I would not promote that fact, right?
I would. No, and really, I would. And what the point I was trying to make, and I made a big mistake in mischaracterizing how they use civil disobedience. So that was my bad.
Yeah.
But I would, if I wonder what a professional communicator, you know, PR person would say, because I think I would have left out everything else Kokoris put in there about they're being threatened and the discourse where we've reached. I think because I think I would have stopped with saying we are so sorry that someone in our employment apparently disparaged the customer. There's no excuse for it. We'll never let it happen again. End of story. When you start diluting it by saying the other stuff, I don't know if that's a good strategy for them or not. And maybe it is. Apparently people are going to go now.
He was also commenting largely on the level of discourse that both sides are engaged in. And
But I think you leave that out because the really big offense here is one of his employees assaulted one of his customers.
Only address that then. Just say, that's right.
We are so sorry. There is no room for this here.
Yeah. A lot of attention has been spent nationally this week on the conditions at least one of the immigration detention facilities in South Texas. You saw perhaps the tragic photo of that migrant girl and her father who died trying to cross the Rio Grande. There is an attorney. There are a number of people who volunteer their services to help represent those immigrants who are seeking asylum in the United States. And when you see that picture, it just breaks your heart. I mean, I don't know if that picture is necessarily going to move the needle much for some people or the administration, but or the Congress, but we just can't let that be happening. And it's not just that picture. It's these conditions that we're hearing about. Children sleeping on cold concrete floors. There were maybe bed bugs in the bedding or lice or something, and so they said we had to remove those, but they didn't have anything else for the kids. They're sleeping on the floor, some of them still in the kids in the clothes that they had on when they first crossed the border. One of the witnesses to all of this and advocates is going to join us, talk to us about what's happening and maybe what's going to happen next at this and some of those facilities. We'll do that after 2:30. It is 2:26. You know, there was a lady listening to us in Louisiana yesterday, and I hope she's listening now. Her name is Paula. Paula, you are a lot of fun. You are out there. I mean, you called in about something we weren't talking about. She kind of explained it, but I just wanted to play back for fun her conversation to clarify a point that she made and to hope that Paula calls us back at 312-981-7200. Paula, you're on WGN. What can I do for you? Hi.
Hi. I just wondered, I'd give you a couple fun facts about the Rolling Stones.
You want to give me a couple facts about what?
The Rolling Stones.
The Rolling Stones. But it says on the call screen here, Paula, that you had a question about student loans, not Rolling Stones trivia.
Oh, no. No, it was Rolling Stones.
Student loans, Rolling Stones.
So we misunderstood you.
They were performing?
Yeah, I know they're in town. And did you go to the show?
No, I'm not able to. I live in Louisiana, hon.
Wait, so you're listening to us on the internet in Louisiana and called in to tell us about the Rolling Stones instead of student loans.
Right. I heard it last week.
Right.
It's making perfect sense.
You guys were talking about the Rolling Stones a lot, and I thought, I wondered if you guys knew just a couple of fun facts. Because I did. When I used to go to school, because I went to college for a couple of years.
Right.
And I studied psychology, and one of the people we studied was Charlie Manson.
Yeah,
that was a little scary.
So if you had to get a bowl of jambalaya right now, how long would it take?
Probably about 20 minutes to run right into town and grab it. They have good jambalaya. They have...
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Just asking.
Yeah, well, here's the... How long have you lived down there?
3 years.
3 years?
Yep.
You know, you've already picked up what I would describe as a Louisiana accent.
Really? I didn't think I had that accent.
All right. Well, you
have to listen closely.
I think that's why she decided to move down there. Move down there. All right. Hold on a second, Paula. Thank you, Paula, for calling yesterday. But then we wanted to reach out to Paula now and again, and we were going to make her our fun music fact correspondent. But she hung up before we got a chance to get her information. So, Paula, 312-981-7200. If you're listening to us in Louisiana, give us a call. One of the things she was talking about was the songs that Charlie Manson wrote for the Rolling Stones and the Beach Boys. And I'd heard about that, but I don't know how much of that is true or not. Now, Jay just handed me a list. This is from Wikipedia, a list of covers of Charlie Manson songs. It says, this is a list of cover versions by notable music artists of songs written by songwriter and convicted murderer Charles Manson. The songs that Manson wrote were released on albums recorded by his followers. This doesn't mean the Beach Boys were a follower, but do I understand correctly then? The Beach Boys' Never Learn Not to Love was written by Charlie Manson. And Guns N' Roses' Look at Your Game, Girl was written by Charlie Manson. Marilyn Manson's Six City, Sonic Boom, Crispin Glover. I don't see the Rolling Stones on here, so maybe they're not on that list. But I think that's bad form. I'm against it. If Charles Manson wrote a song, write another song. I don't think you should be recording and profiting off his lyrics. But that's what this looks like. The Beach Boys Never Learn Not to Love, really? Thanks for the call, Paula. You were fun yesterday, although this is strange. It's 2:30 on WGN. So what's happening at the Rio Grande? What's happening at these immigration detention facilities? A woman who has been a firsthand witness of it and has been speaking out on behalf of those families that are seeking asylum is going to join us after the news. We're 0 for 2 on that E. Jean Carroll, if you're listening. I appreciate that for our conversation with her, but I don't know anything about this lady, except that I'm inclined to believe her. But I do know that she's not good about keeping appointments with WGN Radio. She was not there for us again today. It's time for WGN Radio News. We go into the newsroom. This is Steve Bertrand. What's the warmest temperature you see in the metro?
Looks 87? Like 87 in a few spots. Oaklawn, Elgin.
I didn't even know that was an option. I didn't know that was possible anymore.
It's too hot, really, isn't it?
I know. We went from too cold to too hot. We knew we would. It happened.
Did you see that in, I know Dave Bennett was in Italy and it was very, very hot there.
Yeah.
I just left Switzerland where they're expecting the 90s this week.
102 last week in, this week.
In Paris.
In Paris. 102, 101.
Right. And they're reducing like old cars. You can't drive old cars or trucks this week in Paris because of the heat and the pollution.
Yeah.
102 degrees they're expecting this week.
Yeah, I'm hoping it cools off. I'm going to be there at the end of July with a bunch of listeners. And then the 1st of August, we're going up the Seine to Normandy.
Well, if it gets hot, just go into the hotel rooms because they have great air conditioning.
You can't even get ice in Europe, let alone good air conditioning.
I mean, it's just a different way to live. But, you know, if you're not used to it, it's tough to travel there in the summer when it gets hot.
Yeah. By the way, if you want to travel with me, and all of that notwithstanding, I mean, it's probably not going to be 102 at the end of July and the 1st of August. It's an anomaly. Visit kellycruises.com. We have a few berths still available on that river trip. It's going to be wonderful. Another good way to travel, not on this trip, though, is with Steve Bertrand Travel. Those are the two ones Brenda and I go with. kellycruises.com. If you want to come to France with us next month. So this ongoing reporting of what's been going on at the border has reached a bit of a pitch this week with some awful photographs of a father and his daughter who drowned trying to cross the Rio Grande. The man had gotten across the river. He went back then to get his wife and maybe some others. His daughter decided to accompany him. She got swept away in the current. He did too. And you've seen the picture perhaps of their bodies on the shore of the river there, drowned. It's just heartbreaking. And so too have been the descriptions of some of the conditions that children and others have been kept in. On a phone line is Toby Jaluka, who is a co-organizer of an organization called Light for Liberty. I believe that Toby is also an attorney, and she works as a volunteer with migrants at the McAllen Border Patrol Facility. Toby, I'm John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Are you an attorney by trade, then?
I am.
So in private practice, and this is volunteer work, or tell me a little bit about you and how you came to be there.
That's correct. This is not my day job. I'm a transactional attorney by trade for corporations. And when things just started falling apart at the border, beginning with family separations, you know, I'm also a mother, I had to sit and take stock and say, okay, so this is what's happening. This is unacceptable. And what do I have to offer that could, you know, perpetuate some change in this area? So I signed up as a volunteer, and I accompany other volunteer attorneys on trips to residential facilities and Border Patrol facilities to monitor the government's compliance with the Flores Agreement.
Who organizes that, and how agreeable is the government to letting you volunteers in to watch things?
Well, that's interesting. Most of the organization for the visits comes through the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law, which is responsible for the existence of the Flores settlement. The government is, let's see, they don't enjoy our presence, but they have to have it. So scheduling is usually a little bit on the last minute side of things. A little bit fluid. When we visit, we usually we're treated well. We maintain a professional and a civil relationship with, you know, the Border Patrol agents or the ICE agents or DOJ attorneys, whoever we're interacting with. That's never really an issue. But we do receive the sanitized version of what's going on to the greatest extent possible.
Where do you
that's
live?
For sure.
And then how do you get to where you need to be?
Well, I'm based in Florida. Our volunteers are nationwide, and it's all pro bono self-pay. So we all provide our own transportation to the facilities and our own, you know, lodging. And
are you going to South Texas then? Is that where you're going?
Oh, yes. Well, yes, generally speaking.
Right.
There are other locations, but yes, I was just recently in the Ursula Border Patrol processing facility, which is located in McAllen, Texas.
So, and yeah. Tell me what you saw there.
Well, there is a pervasive health crisis occurring in that particular facility. Widespread illnesses, many critically ill individuals, overcrowding. No sanitary practices are being instituted. There's no running water. There's very few people shower.
How many people are there? How many people are there?
That is a very fine question, and I wish I could give you an answer, but that is always in flux. As much as they're holding people there for lengthy periods of time, there's still always people coming and going. So even when we arrive, we'll receive a census that will list the individuals who are there, but we don't receive a comprehensive census necessarily because we're concerned with the treatment of minors specifically. It's overcrowded, I can tell you that. I'm sure there's hundreds, if several hundred people in that particular facility. At
and
least.
There's no running water?
That's correct. They're held in chain link cages in a warehouse. It's like a light industrial warehouse that they've taken over, and they've put cages into it, and they divvy people up into different cages. There's not enough room for people to lay down.
Is it warm in there or cold? What's the temperature?
The facility that I visited is what is fondly referred to as the freezer. So the temperatures are extremely cold.
Why do they? And they do that as a matter of sanitation, right?
No. It's not. There's no concern for sanitation. They do that because it's cruel.
So they've got this warehouse, and they've put these cages up, and they house these people there. How long is somebody in those cages?
Well, adults are not supposed to be in a processing facility for any amount of time over 72 hours, and children are not supposed to be held in processing facilities for any length of time. They're not designed for residential care. There's no beds, there's no running water, there's, you know, inadequate food. But we were seeing people who had been there for, you know, 17 to 20 days.
And is that adults and children? A lot of the attention lately has been spent on the care and attention to these children, the not nutritional meals they're given, the fact they're still in the clothes they crossed the border in, there's no soap. Yeah. Is that true, and where and what did you see along those lines?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. I saw all of that. We saw children who had, almost everyone was in the clothing that they wore when they crossed the border. Many of them had gone to a Border Patrol facility prior to coming to the one where we were located for this particular visit, where they spent extended periods of time outdoors, some, you know, up to almost a week just living outside in the dirt. And then they come to the Ursula Center, and most are not allowed the opportunity to shower. So they come to us and they're filthy. They're filthy from the trip. They're filthy from the conditions that they're living in. They have not been able to brush their teeth. There's no running water. They can't wash their hands. They're incredibly ill. So imagine having the flu and not having tissues or wipes or a baby that has the flu and you're unable to change their clothes if they've vomited or, you know, so their clothing is crusted with dried mucus and vomit, and if they have pants, which many of the babies don't have pants, socks, or shoes at that point.
Can you tell me this? How does the staff, whatever, or agents interact with these people? Are they sympathetic? Are they indifferent? I mean, they're human beings. These people overseeing their care, they must be saddened or something.
I believe that what you see is in terms of Border Patrol and the other officials who are overseeing these facilities is what you would see in a sampling of the population. I've been told specifically by detainees that there are good guards who will go out of their way to try to provide some care or comfort, but I've been told that there are also bad guards who go out of their way to traumatize people further with verbal abuse and just, you know, just shutting down the bathrooms, not allowing people access to restrooms because they just don't feel like it. They're annoyed. I've seen guards refer to them as bodies instead of humans. Like, who's moving the bodies today? You know, so there are some guards who dehumanize them, but I'm sure there are some guards who are horrified that they've been put in this position, because I'm quite sure it's not what they signed up for.
This facility you're describing for us, which one is this that you're actually telling me about?
This is the Ursula Border Patrol Processing Facility in McAllen, Texas.
And are there others like that? I mean, is this mm-hmm. Grand Central Station? Are there a bunch of these?
It's one of them. No, there's a lot of them. They're scattered throughout the valley, the Rio Grande Valley.
And is this understood to be the worst of them, or is this, do you think, typical?
No, it's very bad, but I don't believe that it's the worst, and I don't believe it's atypical.
Do you have any... sympathy is not the right word, but maybe the explanation is we've had an uptick in the people trying to cross into this country. Even if they're legitimate asylum seekers, we just can't physically handle them. So where do we put them? And we don't have barracks waiting for them. So, yeah, this sucks.
We do. Actually, that's a fantastic question, and it's something that I wish more people were talking about. We do actually have places to put them. We have residential facilities that are designed for the care and keeping of human beings for, you know, at least a somewhat extended period of time, that have hundreds and thousands of empty beds. These are run by for-profit corporations. The taxpayers are paying upwards of $700 to $800 a night per bed. And my understanding is that's whether those beds are full or not. And we are footing the bill for these facilities that are not housing the people they're designed to house. Instead, we have a manufactured crisis where we are keeping people at these Border Patrol stations in conditions and in facilities that are not designed for residential care.
Why aren't we putting them in those other places?
That's a fantastic question.
I'm serious. I mean, I don't mean it rhetorically.
I can't tell you exactly what the administration's plan is, but I can tell you what it appears to be, and that is it appears that they want these people to suffer in these Border Patrol stations.
The idea being, perhaps, that if you all knew down the chain that this is the condition to which you'll go, that maybe that will stem the flow of people into this country.
Maybe, but I don't think that's going to be an effective tactic, because these people aren't leaving just because they want to go to a better school or they want better economic opportunities. These people are leaving because their children and their families are being terrorized, raped, murdered, assaulted by gangs and by gang-run police forces in their countries of origin. So their choice is they stay and they know that their child has been targeted by a gang and that their child will either be dead or have disappeared in the immediate future, or they take their chances and they come to the United States and seek asylum. And they know that there's chances that they'll be separated, and they know that it's not going to be easy. But as a parent, if you give me the choice that I know that my child is going to be killed by gang members, or we walk 2,000 miles and hope that I can at least get my child across the border to safety, some type of safety, I'm going to take the latter.
I just have a minute or two left. Toby Galuca is on the phone line. She's the co-organizer of Light of Liberty. I want to talk to you about that in a second, but about these people that are making these crossings, right, putting their lives in peril. We are all familiar with the picture of the father and daughter who lost their lives trying to cross into the United States. That kind of desperation, I think, is always a reminder to us of how bad it must be there. If you think it sucks here and this is their idea of escape, then imagine what they're trying to leave. So I get that, but are these people legal asylum seekers, people trying to legally come into this country, or are they being caught trying to cross illegally?
Oh, no. Every single person I have spoken to and every visit I've ever made has actively sought out Border Patrol. They are not, they're self-presenting. They're not crossing at the ports of entry because we've closed them. So they're forced, some of them will have spent weeks by the bridges of the ports of entry trying to get in and are then unable to. So they come across the river, which is the only available way. They search for a road. They will walk for hours searching for Border Patrol agents.
And when they do that, is that a legal presentation, if you will?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same thing as showing up at Ellis Island or, the ports in Philadelphia when our European ancestors arrived. That's how you present yourself from asylum. You step onto American soil and you say, I'm here and I would like to apply for asylum.
What can our listeners do?
Our listeners, and that was the question I had to ask myself when I left Ursula, is this can't stand. What is in my power to do to affect change? And because we live in a participatory democracy, I think that our only choice is to take action. And that is why myself and a few other amazing activists have started this mass mobilization, which will culminate in what is now an international candlelight vigil that will occur on July 12th. You can find more information at lightforliberty.org, but it will hopefully help draw attention to and honor those people whose human rights are being violated at the border, and also push our elected representatives to make the necessary changes in policy so that we can demonstrate that we are Americans who are actually walking the walk of the foundational principles of our country.
That's July 17th?
July 12th.
July 12th.
And we have over 200 locations nationwide. There will be several at actual detention centers, and we have 5 main events that will be held in El Paso, San Diego, Homestead, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Is there something scheduled for Chicago, do you know?
Oh, yes.
So there'll be a candlelight vigil in Chicago on the 12th as well.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And if you visit our website, there is a link to the local events, and you can click on the link, and it will take you to the page with all the information on your local event.
I want to get some nutrition bars or jugs of water or bars of soap or wipes or something and donate them and get them there, but I don't know that that's the issue, right?
The government won't accept it because, A, that's not the issue. They have it, and it's not money. But what you can do is there are organizations who are on the ground who are supporting these people when they're released.
Right.
And that we have also on our website, if you go to our link of sponsor organizations, you can donate. We're not accepting donations, but we're directing donations
Good.
To the organizations that are on the ground providing support and have been doing so for
So you're comfortable when I go to your organization and I see those links, you're comfortable with my making a donation to one of those. That's a good investment.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Those organizations have all been vetted. They are all in coalition and have been doing good work for some of them for decades.
Toby Jaluka, volunteer florist attorney, has worked with migrants at the McAllen Border Patrol Facility. And that organization she's talking about is Light for Liberty. That's July 12th. Lightforliberty.org or something like that?
Yes, lightsforliberty.org.
Okay. Is that light plural or light singular?
Lights. Plural.
Lightsforliberty.org. Toby, thank you for doing what you're doing. I can't imagine
sir,
how...
thank you for helping.
Frustrating.
We need to get the word out.
Your days must be at times. I can get the word out. You do the heavy lifting, and maybe we'll get a lot of lights up here in Chicago, too.
That would be amazing.
We'll talk again. Thank you, Toby.
Okay. Thank you so much, John. Have a good one.
Toby Jaluka. It's 2:56. She's in Florida at her own expense. She and volunteers travel to Texas, and they do the work that she just described. So that's lightsforliberty.org. It's 2:56 into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. Nope, it's going to be with probably Kim Gordon and Rokan, all saying hi next. Hi! It's 2:59. This is WGNRadio.com. I don't think we're on the radio just yet, Rokan. I think the Sox game is winding down, though. So we're getting close to time for Sox baseball. I don't know, Lauren Lapka, have you been paying close enough attention to where the White Sox are right now?
Definitely towards the end, and last I saw we were still up, but this whole series with Boston has been hit and miss. We'll be up, and then they'll come back and match us, and then we'll be up again, and then they'll come back and match us, and end up beating us, so I really want to...
It's been a lot of fun. It's just been a lot of fun.
Kevin and I are really amused by the fact that Lauren believes she's a shortstop on the team, which they need one now.
Yeah.
Or are you getting on her case for saying we?
Yeah, no, she is such an Uber fan. It's like amazing. Like of this and the Blackhawks. It was like G and N had a baby and they and it was Lauren.
What were you doing in Oregon then or wherever? That must have been torture for you to be out in Washington.
Especially considering I had to wake up at 3 a.m. So my hours were so off that even if I wanted to try and stream a game, I couldn't because I had to be in bed.
Yeah, right.
It was awful.
What's your one team, bro? Like of all of them, college and pro in the Chicago area, you're only going to get to hear or see one game.
That's tough.
And I'll give you the whole season, but
that's
one.
Well, I mean, that's the thing because, you know, I would say Bears, but that's a limited season.
Yeah.
Right?
16 games, maybe playoffs.
Yes. So I got to go with the Hawks.
Yeah. I'd agree.
You go Hawks?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a bigger hockey fan than baseball or football.
Right. It wouldn't be a baseball team for me. The Bears, you know, I would say I'm a basketball guy.
Cheat? Can I take the Hawks and then can I like sneak out and see the Bears games on Sundays?
No, that's exactly what I didn't ask.
You're the worst rules.
What are you doing today,
Thank God we don't have to have that. All right. Well, on the CLTV, which we just started on, we're going to have Lourdes Duarte joining us in just a few minutes. Oh my God. Eric Trump being spat upon, while at a restaurant here in Chicago, a very fancy restaurant here
in
Chicago.
Our news click is like, okay, speak your piece if that's how you feel, good, or no, we don't go there. And then there's one in between. Like, yeah, I get it, but you shouldn't do that. So we gave you your options.
I don't think you should do that. I think that just, you know, gives... And that, look, he took the high ground. Yeah, it's very rare that you see a high ground being able to be taken in terms of decorum. You know, thinking of policy is one thing. Decorum's a whole other deal. Speaking of that, we have the audio of the president's interview with Maria Bartiromo.
Yeah.
The self-proclaimed money honey from Fox Business Channel, which is, you know, we like to say, well, these are off the rails. This is off the rails.
Why?
He says things in this interview, this is from this morning, that Fox is, you know, like they've kind of... they're sort of acting like it didn't happen because it's so out of the, as a matter of fact, there's a bunch of stories about that, about how they're trying to normalize that interview. It's unbelievable the stuff he said, not only about Mueller, but stuff he said about his own Fed chairman, how he made him famous. And now look at him.
I figured that Mueller's probably making him stress right now, right? I mean, if Mueller's going to sit and testify, this thing's not going to go away. It's going to have another news cycle. It's not until July. So he's just, this wound's going to fester for
right,
weeks.
For the next 3 weeks. And it's interesting because he's, it's bigger than, because they'll, questions that have not been out, issues and specifics about the Mueller report that have not really been out in the firmament are now going to get focused on.
Did you see the 10-act play of the reading of the Mueller report?
I'm sorry, I missed it. Was that at the new Niederlander Theater?
No, this was a thing. A bunch of celebrities took the Mueller report and broke it down into 10 acts, and they read it very dramatically on stage. And Bob, no, it wasn't Bob Schieffer. Was it Bob Schieffer? No. There was a famous journalist who comes out, introduces the cast, and then they do the reading. And if you haven't taken the time to read the 400 pages of the Mueller report in 1 hour, you can stream this. Go to the web, just Google it. The Mueller report in 10 acts, it's a dramatic presentation of this very specific charges against him. Like, you don't have to worry about all the details. Just cut to the chase. And it's 10 chase scenes, and oh, it's jaw-dropping. Wow. So if you got nothing else to do, do that. All right, well, have a really good show.
Thank you, John.
Goodbye.
This is WGN Everywhere, streaming live from Chicago. Kim Gordon's got the news.